Hello, everyone, and welcome to Parkside Today. You know, we've discussed many topics on the program during the past year, and today we're going to add to the list. My guest is Maggie Lawler, who officially, for less than 2 months, is also known as Maggie Loney. And we're going to take a look back at the Green Bay Packers college football draft that took place a little over a week ago. We have not talked Packer football on Parkside Today. So, Maggie, welcome.
Thank you for having me. I'm really excited.
So in August, Maggie joined the Lombardi Lounge website, writing about the Packers, and typically she writes about three pieces a week during the season and more like about once a week during the off season. Since February, she's been a podcaster for the Pack-A-Day podcast. And during the draft, Maggie was a contributor to the Cheesehead TV draft party on YouTube. Now, Maggie does have a regular day job, and during normal working hours, she is part of the instructional design team here at UW Parkside, working primarily on online education offerings. Maggie, my first question about the draft, this does not imply criticism or support.
Okay.
It's just a question. What was your reaction when the name Rashawn Gary was announced as the Packers' first pick?
So Mark and I were in the car actually driving home.
Mark is your husband.
Yes, Mark is my husband. Okay. He was driving. And we had just pulled into the house, and I was wondering if we were going to make the pick. And then he checked his phone, and Gary. So he spoiled it for me. I didn't even get to, like, watch it or see it. He just saw it happen. And I was really surprised. I know that we had both exchanged who we thought our first-round picks would be, you and I.
Mm-hmm.
I was really set on a particular player, so when that didn't happen, I was really surprised. But it took me, like, 5 minutes to warm up to it, and now I'm really happy with it, so...
So who was your top pick in your mock Maggie Lawler draft?
I wanted Ed Oliver, who went to the Bills, but I didn't think that he would get all the way to 12. Mm. So my second option was Brian Burns for the Packers. I thought he would, the edge rusher from Florida State, I thought that he would be a great addition. But Rashawn Gary is basically a bigger version of him with
mm-hmm.
almost the same speed, so can't complain at all.
Mm-hmm.
He should have been. Or could have been a top five pick if he stayed healthy in college. So I think the Packers might have gotten a steal at 12.
Okay, and I went with the, you know, I got caught up in the media hype of someone who looked like, wow, if this person is running around at wide receiver. But you know, that was that after after watching a little bit of the draft on Thursday and Friday, I realized that I may have got caught up in the hype just a little bit there. And then we hear after that pick that, and I don't want to just get away from Rashawn right away, but I want to get back to that. But on the second pick of the first night on Thursday, the Packers trade 2 fourth-round picks to move up. Based on the fact that they traded 2 picks to move up, what did you think of the move up? Would Savage, do you think, have not been there? Were they pretty sure, confident of that?
Yeah, so if you look at the teams that were drafting right ahead of the Packers with the Ravens, the Seahawks trying to recoup some of their picks, even the Colts, there were quite a few teams that were really interested in targeting the safety position.
Mm-hmm.
I know a lot of people talked about the Ravens potentially being one of those teams, given that they just lost Eric Weddle. But, yeah, I think that Savage is arguably the best safety in the class. He pairs mm-hmm. really well with the offseason addition and free agency of Adrian Amos.
Mm-hmm.
So... the fact that in Brian Gutekunst, his press conference after the fact, he said he knew for a fact that Darnell Savage would not have been there at 30.
Mm-hmm.
It mm-hmm. made sense to trade up for him since he was the top guy on their board. And you can also tell that it's a brand new front office, given the fact that Ted Thompson likely never would have traded away some mid-round picks.
Mm-hmm.
So you can tell that Brian Gutekunst in his second year is going to be a lot more aggressive as a GM, both through free agency and through the draft, really targeting his top guys.
Sure. So going back to Rashawn as the first pick, what was it about him that the Packers, in your opinion, what was it about him that the Packers liked so much?
So there's something called a relative athletic score, a RAS, that is a measurement for player athleticism.
Mm-hmm.
And if you look at the last couple drafts, Brian Gutekunst has typically targeted players that have elite RAS scores, which is over the 8. 0 threshold.
Mm-hmm.
And Rashawn Gary had a 9.95. So these are people that are about as athletic as humanly possible at their positions.
Yeah.
Darnell Savage was the same way. He had, I think, a 9-point something. It was pretty high. So these are athletes who are fast and really athletic and muscular, and they can make some really impressive plays. So I think for Brian Gutekunst, it was more about getting some talent and adding depth to the team. Mm-hmm. I think Savage might be the only player picked in this draft class that should be an immediate day one starter.
Mm-hmm.
Like I said, opposite Amos at the free safety position.
Yeah, and as they were talking about the different players, and especially the first two that the Packers took, it seems like an emphasis on speed.
Yep.
That these guys are fast, and if you're being asked to do more coverage in Mike Pettine's defense, that without the speed today, where are you? Right.
Right, and Rashawn Gary is one of those flexible guys. He played more along the interior of the line and as a defensive end in college, but he projects more as an edge rusher in the NFL.
Mm-hmm.
So when you look at that front seven now for the Packers with Mike Daniels and Kenny Clark in the interior,
mm-hmm.
and then you have Za'Darius and Preston Smith on the outside, these are all guys who can line up pretty much anywhere on the line, and Rashawn Gary's no exception to that.
Right.
They'll play him in a lot of different spots. And that's going to create a lot of mismatches for opposing offensive lines when they have to try and game plan with all of them on the field to figure out who's rushing from where.
Mm-hmm.
One
mm-hmm.
of those guys should always come free.
Mm-hmm. And you and I have chatted Packers for quite a while, and I know that that you're a Mike Pettine fan, and we were sharing before we started the show today that watching Green Bay TV on Thursday night, and one of the commentators, and I forget which channel he was on, was talking about that this, if Mike Pettine was going to stay and the Packers wanted him to stay, he needed some assurance that he was going to get the people that he would need for his defense, correct?
Right, and I think that was a big part of it. When you have Aaron Rodgers, you have really won the lottery as far as coming in as a brand new head coach or a new offensive coordinator.
Mm-hmm.
But Mike Pettine, his cupboard was a little bare when you looked at who he was working with, especially having Clay Matthews and Nick Perry both leave or be released. The loss of HaHa, they're not wanting to sign Kentrell Bryce.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it kind of showed you what the Packers thought of the talent they had
mm-hmm.
on defense. And so far, with the additions in free agency, three big defensive names that'll all be day one starters and the first two picks in the draft going to defense, you can really tell that side of the ball is what they're wanting to emphasize.
Right, right. And they it has been a defense that, I mean, I look at the Packers last year, and I think the team was not that far away from being a really good team in terms of record goes.
Right.
You know, they lost some games by close.
Mm-hmm.
It's a couple plays, one way or the other, and against quality teams in the league. So by strengthening the defense being something that maybe they get off the field a little bit easier or a little bit more regularly than they did maybe the past couple of years, that gives the offense more time to be out on the field, which should be a good thing.
Right, and their defense was really decimated by injuries towards the end of the season.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they were playing Tremont Williams at safety, which
yeah.
he did a little bit of for Mike Pettine previously, but that's not his natural spot. When Mike Daniels got hurt and Kenny Clark got hurt, they were really playing with some guys on the line that were mid-round or undrafted players that were on the roster, so especially losing Mo Wilkerson so early. So I think a lot of what this draft was about was just adding depth behind Mike Daniels and Kenny Clark, especially since both guys are going into a contract year.
Mm-hmm.
And I would be willing to bet my minimal life savings that Kenny Clark will come back, but this could be Mike Daniels' last season in Green Bay.
Mm.
So a lot of this was about adding depth to the line and making sure that if something happens and a player gets injured or eventually leaves, the Packers have plenty of depth to solidify that spot.
Mm-hmm. What is it about Mike Pettine that makes you a fan of his?
There's a lot. I like that he is, you never really know what he's going to do on defense. He's a big fan of utilizing his safeties in a bunch of different ways. He has a lot of blitz packages that you don't know if the rush is coming from the edge or from the interior. And I like that he doesn't smile. I think that's funny. You see a lot of people call him Stone Cold Mike Pettine on
mm-hmm.
Twitter. But he seems like such a fun guy with such like a dry sense of humor. And then there's pictures of him and he just doesn't smile. So He seems like he'd be a really fun guy to get a beer with, in my opinion.
And so the Packers have lost a couple of players, in especially on defense, in terms of Clay Matthews, who had an amazing run in Green Bay, and Nick Perry. I don't know either of them personally, so again, not being critical, but it seemed like on Nick Perry's side, very much an often injured player, that they were never able to get. When Nick Perry was healthy and playing, he was a really good player, really good contributor, but didn't just, whether it's bad luck or whatever, wasn't able to stay healthy. And kind of can say the same thing about, as I watched Matthews toward the end of his stay in Green Bay, playing him as they did as an edge rusher, he seemed to lose his effectiveness that he had as early on as a player. So do you see the loss of those two as actually being all that much of a loss?
It's tough, especially for someone like Clay Matthews, who was on your Super Bowl team and has such an impact in the community, always does the charity softball. But when you look at the people...
And you have a 6-foot-tall poster of Clay Matthews in your office, just to let people know that that is true?
I found it in the hallway. It's a Pepsi ad, so
I kept it.
So it startles me a lot.
Yeah.
I forget it's there. But when you look at the Packers, or the players that the Packers brought in to replace Matthews and Perry, they are both 26-year-olds. Mm. So the Packers got younger. They typically don't offer players a third contract in Green Bay. They typically try to go younger on that side of the ball, especially.
Mm-hmm.
So both Za'Darius and Preston Smith are 26. These are guys that the Packers signed on 4-year contracts. So you have to think that their best football is ahead of them when they come to Green Bay. And when you look at Matthews, his best football arguably is pretty far behind him. He's not going to be like a 70-snap player in Los Angeles.
Mm-hmm.
He's going to be a rotational guy, kind of similar to what Julius Peppers did when he came to the Packers.
Mm-hmm.
Nick Perry hasn't latched on anywhere yet, so I imagine he'd be in a similar role, even though he's a little bit younger. But I think the Packers, as sad as it is to say, definitely upgraded quite a bit.
Yeah, yeah. Taking a look at, so we talked about the number one and two picks for the Packers on Thursday night. Now we get into Friday evening, and they go other side of the football. And we're looking at which, you know, I thought that was, you know, number 12, like you said, you won the lottery as an incoming head coach. So your job should be make sure that your lottery stays healthy,
right,
and he's not getting hit by really big people who are out there to hurt him. Tell us a little bit about what you think of those two picks in Elgton Jenkins and Jace Sternberger.
Yeah, so I know a lot of fans were really anticipating getting a wide receiver in the second round. That was kind of the Ted Thompson special. I mean, he got Greg Jennings, Jordy Nelson, Devontae Adams, Josh Jones, Randall Cobb, all those guys.
Mm-hmm.
Actually, James Jones was a third-round pick. But, you know, he historically has found quite a bit of talent in the second round. So the running joke had been to just call Ted Thompson in Texas, let him pick your second-round player, and then let him go back to resting.
Yeah.
So a lot of people expected that to be a wide receiver. And then it wasn't. It was a center slash guard. I mean, he'll end up playing guard in Green Bay. But a lot of fans weren't happy about that. They wanted another weapon for Aaron Rodgers, especially with the departure of Randall Cobb.
Mm-hmm.
But to me, you know, you just paid the face of your franchise millions and millions of dollars to arguably finish out his career in Green Bay.
Yeah.
Given the offensive line play that they had the last couple seasons, you know, it's really important to protect the face of your franchise.
Right, right. And I thought the point you made Friday night on Cheesehead TV, which I really enjoyed watching on my phone because I thought that was pretty cool to do that. But the point you made about the Packers not really having a center,
right,
other than Lindsley. And now here's a person who, while they're talking, someone said, oh, he could play all five positions,
right,
on the line. Don't know if he can or if he can't, but here's a person that is maybe a legitimate backup to him, to Lindsley.
Yeah, so Corey Lindsley is an Iron Man. I mean, he played every single snap last season. He's historically really healthy, so knock on wood. I mean, I don't want to jinx the guy or anything, but the Packers don't have a true center on the roster, or they didn't outside of Lindsley until they brought in Elgton Jenkins.
Mm-hmm.
I think that Elgton Jenkins might actually end up being one of the starting guards this year. I'm not even sure that Lane Taylor will start at left guard. I think he'll have quite a bit of competition. But when you look at even the addition of Billy Turner in free agency, whether he ends up starting at right guard or moves over to tackle if something happens to Brian Bulaga, you can tell that the Packers weren't happy with their offensive line.
Yeah.
You know, obviously you have David Bakhtiari, who's your premier left tackle, best left tackle in the league. And then Corey Linsley is phenomenal as a center. And when Brian Bulaga is healthy at right tackle, he does well as well.
Mm-hmm.
But the health has been an issue. So there's really three positions on the line that you could upgrade. And Elgton Jenkins gives them the flexibility to upgrade either guard position or to fill in for Linsley in a pinch if something happens.
And toward the end of last season, I was listening to, I believe it was one of the pregame things, and they were talking to Mark Tauscher about specifically about Jason Spriggs. And Tauscher's opinion was that they asked if he could be a quality contributor, is kind of the way the question was phrased. And his opinion was that he thinks he can be a quality contributor. He seemed to like the right tackle position, and instead of moving him around from he plays the left tackle, he plays some guard, he moves here, that if he gets a chance to get stabilized at that right tackle position, he could be a quality contributor. Do you see that in him?
Yeah, he also has added quite a bit of muscle the last couple of seasons as well. So I think part of the issue is that he came in, and when you spend a second-round draft pick, you typically expect them to be able to fill in a pinch.
Yeah.
But he came in, and he had to play maybe earlier than I think he was expecting or that the Packers were expecting him to have to, and he wasn't able to keep up with the speed of the NFL. You know, the right tackle and the left tackle, it's all about meeting the edge. You have to set the edge so they can't get around you. And he was not able to do that his first couple seasons. He's added muscle. He's bulked up. He's getting a little quicker. So I do believe that given the opportunity, he would still be competing for one of those spots.
Mm-hmm.
But with the addition of Billy Turner, I think that right tackle backup job is going to be really interesting. I don't think it's anyone's yet.
Yeah, yeah. When you look down then when we get into the two fourth-round picks were traded, so we kind of moved down in the draft a little bit more. But the one that maybe caught my eye the most of the remaining four picks that the Packers had was Dexter Williams, the running back out of Notre Dame. Did he? I don't know that much about Dexter Williams. I don't know what the 4-game suspension the team rules, but it would seem like the suspension was probably maybe something that caused him to drop a little bit, or is it just that running backs are don't have the value in the draft that maybe they used to have?
I think it's a little bit of both. He had mentioned that he talked to all the teams that interviewed him about the suspension and it had gotten taken care of. So there were no character concerns or anything like that with drafting him. But he was projected to go as high as the 4th round. He ended up slipping a little bit to the 6th. But he's another one of those really freaky athletes that Brian Gutekunst tends to look for. He had a really high RAS as well, I think in the 9s somewhere, or an 8.17. But he is the perfect outside zone scheme runner, and Matt LaFleur loves his outside zone running. So I think as a complement to Aaron Jones and Jamal Williams, he's really quick. He's got the ability to break tackles. And his balance is incredible. If you see some of his highlights, he gets hit like in the knees and he's able to stay on his feet. So that's going to be really fun. They haven't talked much about his ability to catch out of the backfield, which is something that I think Matt LaFleur will really be looking for. But the complement that he brings to Williams and Aaron Jones is, I think, really special. He could be a steal on day 3.
Right. As they were drafting, one of the things that struck me a bit was that you've got Michigan, Maryland, Notre Dame, Texas A&M, and it's been a while where it seems like sometimes the Packers are pulling from some lesser-known programs.
Yep.
And in this draft, they stayed pretty much, at least through the initial picks, with I won't say higher quality, but more name recognition college programs. Is that just sort of a what the GM kind of brings to it, or a different philosophy, you think?
I I don't really know. I think a lot of it just has to come down to their board and the best player available. And if you think about the best players, especially when you're getting deeper and deeper into the draft, it's typically the players that have been to the bigger schools,
mm-hmm.
that have more film, they have more notoriety, mm-hmm. they're in a better mm-hmm. program that monitors their health and gives them better opportunities to succeed. So the undrafted free agents now that come in a couple weeks, that's what will really be interesting, is to see those smaller school guys get the opportunity to compete with, you know, the Alabama standouts or the Texas A&M standouts or the Clemson guys,
mm-hmm.
and see how they perform then in those roles. And I know that was kind of a knock against Nasir Adderley, and maybe why he fell to the second, the safety that was Herb Adderley's cousin,
mm-hmm.
Is that he played at Delaware. So maybe there was the thought that he wasn't able to compete with as high-level talent as some of the other safeties,
yeah.
because he wasn't playing for such an esteemed school.
Yeah, and you kind of see where the NFL is going a little bit when you're watching the draft picks of other teams, and oh, there goes a cornerback, there goes a safety, there goes an edge rusher. It's like, you know, what do they want to do? They want to be able to go to run with the receivers and go get the quarterback, and there's the game of defense, right?
Yep.
What, staying on the defensive side for a little bit, who from the 2018 team that, and you mentioned before that they just got hit with so many injuries as they were heading down the stretch and they've got guys playing, you know, who knows where they've come from or that they've picked up. Who do you think it is that if that person stays healthy is probably the biggest contributor coming off of the people who were injured in 2018 on the defensive side?
I'll say someone that was out for most of the season. I think like getting a healthy Kenny Clark back makes the difference in the defense. But since he was only injured towards the end of the season, to me, I wrote about this a little bit already for the Lounge, but Kevin King is one of the potential linchpins of the defense.
Mm-hmm.
If he stays healthy and you can pair him with Jaire Alexander, your corner room is really solid. You don't have to rely on Tremont Williams as much. You can still develop Tony Brown and Josh Jackson. But if Kevin King is injured, then you maybe would wish that you had a little more depth.
Mm-hmm.
So to me, he's the guy. He's had some really unfortunate injuries that have limited his playing time in both seasons that the Packers have had him.
Mm-hmm.
But if he can stay healthy, he can be one of the premier corners in the league. He's got the height and the speed for it.
Right, yeah. Switching over to the offense. I like the Packer receiving core. I mean, I think the people that they brought in last year and Devontae certainly. I mean, I think the year before in 2017, I wondered what kind of year he would have in 2018 given some of the injuries that he – I mean, that young man got hit a few times. Like, maybe you shouldn't – it's amazing that he got up and could continue a week later to play or whatever. But good receivers, good running backs, certainly, you know, Aaron Rodgers, top quarterback in the NFL. What will make, in your opinion, the offensive line better in 2019 than 2018?
The players. I mean, it sounds bad, but they also were limited by the fact that Aaron Rodgers was not able to scramble. You know, after the fact, you find out all the details of the knee injury, and it's so much more severe and so much more dramatic than initially the public had perceived it to be, with the MCL injury. So if he's able to scramble and get out of the pocket, that takes a lot of the pressure off of the offensive line. I know that they still have to block for him, but they're able to move around. When he is limited to being a pocket passer, it's definitely harder for the offensive line. And their starters just couldn't stay healthy either. I mean, that right side of the offensive line was, you know, like musical chairs for a lot of the season, where guys were just rotating in and out, kind of bouncing around. No one could really get stable at a position. So with Aaron Rodgers being healthy, with his ability to scramble, and with the players the Packers brought in, both in free agency and through the draft, I think that both parties should be really happy. The line should be happy that Aaron is feeling better, and Aaron should, you know, feel better about his health and his prospective health going into the season with a stronger O-line.
Sure. What difference do you see, and maybe not a fair question to ask, but with Matt LaFleur, do you think fans will see be able to perceive a difference in the offense? Will the offense look different under LaFleur than it looked under McCarthy?
Yeah, I think it will. And it's the really easy answer, but Matt LaFleur has emphasized quite a bit from the very beginning that he wants to include the run game. And that was something that the Packers, and whether it was McCarthy's fault, a little bit of Rodgers, a little bit of everything, they would typically get away from the run game. And whether that was because Aaron was living and dying by his arm, or, you know, they would fall behind in a game and then he would feel like he had to be the hero, which, you know, the team did put a lot on his back. It's not like he wasn't in that role. He really did have to step up quite a bit. But they would always tend to get away from the run game, and then the offense would end up being pretty predictable. So Matt LaFleur has emphasized, you know, running lanes to open the passing lanes and vice versa. So especially with his emphasis being on the outside zone with the run game, I think that Packer fans will see a lot more balance on offense, and that will give them room for the bigger plays that maybe fans didn't see as much in 2018. Because teams were expecting it.
Yeah. You
know, if they only have to rush three or four, it's a lot easier to defend against the pass.
Right. What about they choose a tight end in the second round there. Do you see the Packers incorporating using the tight end position more under LaFleur than they have recently under McCarthy? Or was that was it not so much coach as opposed to what talent was available there?
Well, it's been discussed quite a bit that the McCarthy offense was very unfriendly to tight ends. He didn't really utilize them effectively. Jimmy Graham has never been a blocking tight end, so asking him to try and fill that role didn't make a lot of sense for the offense. He's typically seen as a big-bodied wide receiver, and his job was to open up the middle of the field for Aaron. Mercedes Lewis, who they brought on to be the blocking tight end as a complement to Jimmy Graham, barely saw the field. Like, he barely got any snaps. I think he had three receptions the entire season. So when you look at the way that they were being utilized and then you look at how maybe Matt LaFleur will use them, he does have Mercedes Lewis back in a blocking role. He does use quite a few two tight end sets. I don't think that the players themselves will matter as much as I think it'll depend a lot more on the scheme and how Matt LaFleur is able to utilize them. If you look at the tight ends that he was playing with when he was with the Titans last season, after Delanie Walker got hurt, it was a lot of who? And I don't mean that in a disrespectful way, but he didn't have like a Rob Gronkowski or a Travis Kelce that he was working with. It was just any other player on his offense, but he was able to still get production out of them because of the way he schemed them open.
You touched a little bit on some of the players from maybe smaller schools are now being invited to camp. They weren't part of the draft, and already I have my favorite. I looked this morning, and I'm going to be a big fan of C.J. Collins, the most proficient passer coming out of Southwestern Assemblies of God University. Do you know anything about C.J. Collins, my new favorite Packer?
I had to Google that when it came out because I didn't know that it was a school. Yeah. So.
But what surprised me was, you know, you look at him and go, well, they list him at, you know, not that just because you're tall and weigh a lot makes you a quarterback, but, you know, here's a guy at 6'4", 225, 230 coming out. You go, okay, well, you've got the size to play the position. You know, whether or not you can transfer an NAIA school experience to the NFL, maybe a little harder to say.
Yeah, it kind of reminds me of Tim Boyle. I mean, they typically have a player from a more recognizable school. Brett Hundley was from UCLA.
Yeah.
Sean Kizer's from Notre Dame. Yeah. But Tim Boyle was Eastern Kentucky. So they always will have their guy who maybe they perceive as the number two guy.
Yeah.
And then they always will take a flyer on some Division III or some school that you haven't really heard of.
Yeah. Do you think DeShone Kizer do they see a need to go with a more veteran number two at quarterback? So far when DeShone was in last year, you know, it was not like, oh, okay, the offense is kind of moving down. It's not as good as number 12, but it's still moving. It's not. When Hundley was playing and, you know, had to play for an extended period of time, the offense is not moving. Do you think they look beyond maybe – you know, because DeShone Kizer is, 23 years old, I think?
Yeah.
You know, he's still a young guy. to maybe get a little bit more experience for that number two spot?
I think if they were going to bring in that kind of player, I think they would have done it already. I think since they traded away Demarius Randall to the Browns to get Kizer, I think they'll give him at least one more year. I mean, they stuck with Brett Hundley for quite a while, and he was supposed to be the heir apparent in situations like that, and then they couldn't get production out of him. So giving him a brand new offense, giving him Matt LaFleur, who he had worked with a little bit at Notre Dame in a limited capacity, I think that he's going to be their guy for at least one more season, unless, of course, something happens and he proves that he's not. But.
Yeah, right, right. Well, Maggie, I thank you for being on the show. I thank you for your insight on the Packers and the draft. You obviously have done a great deal of research on not only just the Packers in general, but the players in the draft. So I appreciate your comments. But before I let you go, I have to ask this question. What was it like to get married at Lambeau Field? Maggie got married at Lambeau Field.
It's very cliche to talk about your wedding as the best day of your life. But it was. And part of what made it so special was the fact that you get to take your wedding pictures in the bowl. So they won't let you touch the field.
Mm-hmm.
But I did maybe accidentally drag my train over the field.
Oh, no.
Quite a bit.
Oh, no.
And there may or may not be a Lambeau Field turf in my dress that I will not send to the cleaner.
Wow. Now, was there no one watching at the time that you did this? Or
it was one of those, I'm going to turn around really quick, and you have 10 seconds. Just don't run across the field. So it's like, all right.
Yeah.
I can make that work. So I touched it a little and, you know.
Yeah.
I had to at least feel it.
Cool. Well, congratulations on congratulations on your wedding at Lambeau Field. Congratulations on all the things you're doing between the podcast and writing and Cheesehead TV. Thank you for what you do here at UW Parkside. It's been my pleasure to have Maggie Lawler today on Parkside today. Thanks, Maggie.
Thanks so much.